All right, everybody, here we are. It is the last episode of season four, The Art of Community. And what a way to conclude this season. It is Easter, joy, joy, joyful. And there's all three of us. Yay. All three of us are here today. So you've got me, Dana.
And Chelsea.
And Claire.
And I'm so excited to hear everybody and see your faces. And so we have a lot to go through because, boy, this is a journey. This is a journey for Jesus, a journey for the risen Christ, a journey for all of us. And we're going to get it started. We're going to let Chelsea just give us some background story, and then we'll move on to where we are presently with Claire. So, Chelsea, you want to just take it away for us?
Yes. And Dana, you already named it. I mean, this is our Easter episode. So the day we get to talk about risen Jesus and celebrate. But we have to back up because a lot happens leading us up to this point. It's not just you're all like with your friends and then all of a sudden you're resurrected. There's some things that happen before resurrection comes, as we know in our own lives. So we've been in the Gospel of John. We're staying in the Gospel of John. Last time we were talking with you, Jesus was getting anointed by Mary, kind of the sign that the time had come for him to march into Jerusalem. Well, he marches in and there's a big parade called Palm Sunday, if you grew up in a liturgical church, where people are celebrating and recognizing that Jesus is the king. And the religious elite are just getting madder and madder and madder and like plotting his death and recognizing this man is too powerful, too influential. We got to take care of him. And they find out how. They arrest him. They have kind of like a fake trial for him where he gets convicted of blasphemy and like, you know, all these false things that aren't really true. And he has a really difficult couple days after that. He has to carry his cross up to Calvary. He gets beaten and humiliated and stripped and spat on and yelled at. And the crowds that once followed him are now, you know, turning on him and shouting at him. And he goes on to very brutally be executed by the state by being nailed on a cross. And it's a dark day that the sky becomes dark as Jesus declares, "It is finished." And in the midst of this, you know, a lot of his disciples have deserted him. He has Judas, who has denied him, which basically turned him over to the authorities. We have Peter, one of his closest disciples, who denies even knowing him. And then we have Mary Magdalene, who is in the midst of this fear and this trauma, watching her beloved teacher and friend go through this, fearful of her own life, I'm sure, standing at the foot of the cross. And so we really want to honor Mary with this conversation and talk about her faithfulness, the way that she doesn't leave Jesus, the way that she wants to love him even through that hard time. So Jesus dies and they take him to the tomb to bury him. And so our story of Easter picks up for today.
And so I want to just highlight a little bit of what I hear from Chelsea, and that is I'm in my mind trying to picture this woman, her friend, her teacher, the one she knows is God incarnate, and she's watching him be nailed to a cross. I mean, that is trauma, right, in and of itself. And she stays, she sits there, and she takes it in. And so I think that's a really important, just an important picture and reflection for me, at least, as we get into our current scripture today, which is John 20, which Claire is going to work through. So I just wanted to kind of go back and say, you know, here's what, as you're saying these words, here's what I'm feeling and thinking and seeing.
Yeah, there's a really great book by James Cone called The Cross and the Lynching Tree. If you haven't read it, it's a really important work. But talking about, you know, I was thinking about this, it's like being at a lynching, you know, and the fear that act tried to evoke in the whole community. And so as an African-American and Black person being at a lynching, how fearful that would be. And that's basically what Mary's doing, is showing up for the lynching. And it was really this, I mean, it was embarrassing. It was painful. It was ending in death, or so we thought. But it was also a way to kind of like drive fear throughout the community, like shutting down this movement of things that was happening. And Mary is associated with this movement and still in the midst of that fear shows up and stays at the cross. I just think that's a really powerful, again, James Cone makes that distinction or that connection between those two, and really powerful, kind of puts it in a little bit more current perspective for us.
Absolutely. She really puts her body on the line and not leaving Jesus throughout that crazy week in their lives. But we pick up in John 20, and it says, "Early on the first day of the week, while it was still dark, Mary Magdalene is found at the entrance of the tomb. And again, she is continuing to put her body on the line to stay close to Jesus. She's out there in the dark.
Not safe for a woman to be out in the dark walking around, especially during a time like this.
Right.
No, but she sees back in the day, the ways that the tombs worked, they had stones that were rolled in front of them, or like giant boulders. And she notices that this stone has been removed from the entrance, so you can physically go in to the tomb, which is obviously not normal. So she runs up to Peter and some of the other disciples, and she says, her immediate thought is, Jesus, someone has taken Jesus's body out of this tomb. Her mind immediately goes to grave robbers.
Right.
And so Peter and the other disciples, they start running to the tomb. I think it's very funny in verse 4. It says one of them outran the other. But I think, you know, more than it just being a funny detail in there, I think it shows the urgency and immediacy of it. This is such a physical, action-packed passage. There's so much emotion for Mary. And with the disciples, it's so physical. They're running. They're trying to get into this tomb to see it. And one of them ducks in and the other one just goes straight into the tomb, and they see the strips of linen there, the cloth that had been wrapped around Jesus. The cloth was still there, but there was no body. Jesus was not there. And it says the other disciples who had reached into the tomb first also went inside, and he saw this and believed. I think that's interesting because Dana and Chelsea and I, as we were preparing to talk about this passage, we were wondering what was it that they were believing? It's not quite that they were believing that Jesus had been raised, because at this point they still thought that Jesus's body had just been taken. They were believing what Mary Magdalene was telling them.
Right. Because for them, they still did not, even though Jesus kept telling them over and over again what was going to happen, they just couldn't really understand it. And following right after the word believed, it indicates like they really still did not get it. So it's like they just believed Mary Magdalene that, okay, the body's gone. Somebody's stolen the body. Where's the body? Because they can't really understand what this means.
I think it's so funny that we see that time and time again, that the disciples walk with Jesus. They see, they hear everything. Jesus explains to them in secret, outside, they have special teachings, and they still don't get it. And we were talking with a friend a couple of weeks ago. It's like, in 2,000 years later, we still don't get it. I mean, we miss the point all the time. And I think that that's an important part in the Gospels, that we can miss the point, or we can it's not about having right belief, right? Like, it's not about knowing everything. It's more about right heart. Mm. And so I think that this is just another example of you know, they miss it again.
When we're looking at this passage, I kind of like to picture, when I'm reading the Gospels, is these vignettes of Jesus's life and the disciples' lives. There's another vignette that comes right after this scene where they're running in and out of the tomb and wondering what has happened to Jesus. And it starts again with Mary outside of Jesus's tomb, and she's crying. And as Dana brought up at the beginning of our conversation, it's been a very traumatic week for her.
Yeah.
She's in this quiet moment, and I imagine that she's finally able to kind of sit, breathe, and just let her emotions flow.
I was gonna say, and I go back to, I think how emotional this has been for her, right? So, you know, she's watched this person, this her beloved teacher, her God, die on this cross. And then what we didn't even say is, like, you know, they take the body down. She has to she's going to cleanse the body. She's going to prepare the body, anoint the body for burial. She's wrapping it. And now it's like, where is the body? Are you kidding me? Like, oh my, like, just the heaviness that must be within her, and just the release that has to come through tears, you know, just automatic release of tears.
So she's crying, and she peers over to look into the tomb this time, and she sees two angels in white. And it says they're seated where Jesus's body had been. And they ask her why she's crying. And she's crying because she says, they've taken Jesus. Jesus is gone. But she turns around and she sees someone standing there. This person who some traditions say she mistakes this person for the gardener, asks, you know, why are you crying? Who are you looking for? You know, and she tells him the same thing, you know, they've carried Jesus away. Please tell me where they've put him and I'll go get him. And this person looks at her and says, Mary. And she turns around and continues to cry, and it's Jesus.
Yeah,
him saying her name in that moment where he said her name, she knows that it's Jesus.
Yeah, and what a powerful thing is. I mean, just him calling her name, Mary. And we saw this in the Lenten episode that both of you did, where Jesus with Mary of Bethany calls her by name. And this is a common, we see this theme in John, where Jesus is calling the sheep by name. Jesus is naming them. And that there's power in hearing your name. And what does that do? What transformation happens when you hear Mary? Mary, it's me.
I think it's so easy to take something like this and make it a very type of cliche thought and saying something like, oh, you know, Jesus created us and knows each of us by name, which sounds beautiful, but and is true, but it's so much deeper than that. Mm-hmm. In this moment when he's calling Mary's name, she's being reminded of who she truly is. There's a passage Dana, Chelsea, and I both love, the Women's Bible Commentary. And the section on John, who is written by Gail R. O'Day, she has some thoughts on this passage, which I would like to read. She says, when Mary hears the voice of the risen Jesus, she sees the garden and the gardener differently. Because if you know, when she was looking at this person before, she did not recognize it as Jesus. She no longer understands the empty tomb as a manifestation of death, but as testimony to the power and possibilities of life. This wasn't just Jesus calling her name and saying her name. This was a total transformative moment. Up until this time, she had experienced this horribly traumatic moment that had changed her life. Her life was about to be lived in such a new way that her friend, her teacher had died. That was going to profoundly affect her life. But in this moment when Jesus called her name, the entire trajectory of her life and the disciples' lives changed.
And there's no way she could have known, right? When she gets to the, after she goes through all that trauma, she puts the body in, she takes care of the body, and then she goes back and sees that it's gone. I just imagine how depleted she must have felt, how hopeless, mm-hmm. like how fearful. I mean, this is just an empty tomb without knowing the ending feels like a hopeless story. It feels mm-hmm. like a story with like a bad ending. And mm-hmm. That's where she is up until this point. I mean, until she sees, recognizes, until she gets called by name, until she's known, that's where she is. And then when she says her name and she's known that she's known by God, it changes the whole thing in a way that she could have never noticed or known before.
I just had this thought. I am going to take us on a little digression. And if you think it is absolutely makes no sense, then please, we can just don't even pay attention. But as I'm listening to Clara and I'm listening to Chelsea and I'm hearing the words, like the hearing, really trying to actively pay attention to the words you're using and the story. And okay, so I'm going to make a confession. I've never watched Downton Abbey.
And neither have I.
Neither have I.
I started to watch it. So I'm at this, oh gosh, I hope people haven't watched it, and I'm going to give something away. Maybe
Spoiler alert.
So I'm at a point now where somebody has died, a very important person, a beloved husband, and it's so sad because he dies as he's after the birth of his child. And there was joyful moment, and then he's driving home to tell the family, and he dies. And the wife is just, as you can imagine, distraught. And it's been, you know, 6 months have gone by. And where I'm going with all this is her family, people that really, really care about her, finally end up having a conversation with her. And the point is, you have to decide whether you want to live in death or whether you want to live in life. We want you to be in life. And that's exactly what they say. And she has to choose to live in life and not be consumed by the death. And when you just read that, Claire, again, I mean, we've read that commentary several times, but it just made me think, like, that's exactly what we have to choose that in spaces, don't we? Like, for our, like, are there times in our lives where we have to choose, are we going to stay in death or are we going to move to life?
Yes. And also,
Okay.
There is space for grief, and there is like, I mean, this just happened, and there's process to trauma. You know, I think even like after, like, let's say Mary had this experience, went to years of therapy, like her body is still going to remember the trauma of what went through.
100%.
So there is a choice, but also there's like process to things. And like, I think we're so conditioned in our culture to just think that like the weeping or the fear or the feelings of hopeless, like those are bad. And I don't think they're bad. I mean, I think they're human. And so that it's okay that we, like, because what I think Mary does so beautifully is she sits there in it and she allows herself to be affected and she weeps and she, like, it's finally catching up to her. Maybe she has a moment just to like let it process and feel the weight of it. And she stays there and she stayed at the foot of the cross and she stayed with him through all of this. Like, she didn't try to escape it or minimize it or numb it. She let herself feel it. And I think there's something really powerful about what she's modeling for us in this throughout her journey with Jesus, but like, especially in this moment, like she stays at the tomb.
Yeah. And I wholeheartedly agree. And I just thought it was interesting. You're right. Like, you have to have a time to process and to let that just move through you. And you don't even know how long that could take. Everybody's different in their processing of death. But I do think that the question is always, when do you decide where you're going to go? How do you move into that new possibility, which is what is the other side of this conversation?
Well, which is why I think transformation is one of the best words, I think, to describe this, because it's less that Mary made a choice. It's more that in Jesus saying her name, he was inviting her to see the world in a whole new way.
Yeah.
And not in a way, like Chelsea said, that negates what happened.
No.
It was traumatic. Jesus did die.
Right.
If you read later in the Gospels, he had the scars to prove it. It didn't go away. And instead of Jesus saying her name and things changing, instead of that negating what happened or getting rid of what happened, it transformed that moment and that moment of resurrection.
I think that's a great way to put it. It's not a choice. There's a transformation that happens within yourself.
Because I'm also thinking of people who experience really, really heavy situations or people who have mental health problems. For them to hear something, for them to hear like, oh, it's a choice that you're going to choose this. Sometimes the chemical imbalances in their brain, that's not possible. And especially for them to hear, you know, someone like me, a pastor, saying like, oh, Jesus will fix that for you. That's not what we're saying.
No.
In fact, we're saying that Jesus, you know, is there with us in that and experiencing that with us and wants to be in that and transform it, and not in a way that negates it, but is there in it.
Well, it reminds me of like when something traumatic happens and it's like, God's going to use this, or like, this is happening for a reason. And it's, I don't know, I feel like it's like really negating somebody's feelings or like minimizing somebody's feelings. It's like, there might be something that comes from this, but like right now, this is like how it feels. And that you can hold both things, right? Like, you, this can really be awful to go through an experience. And like, of course, I'm going to be changed in some way. And maybe there's the invitation to change in various ways. But yeah, that Jesus doesn't keep, like, relationship with Jesus or God doesn't keep us from those things.
No, they don't. It doesn't prevent anything, right? That there's still pain, there's still suffering, there's still trauma, right? It doesn't prevent it.
Well, and I think that's part of the entire point of Jesus's death and resurrection.
Yeah.
Because it tells us that Jesus was fully human and fully divine, but fully human in the way that everyone dies. No one escapes death, including Jesus. Jesus went to the grave as every human has.
That's right. Yeah. And Jesus is in it with us.
Then he goes on to say this interesting thing, like, don't cling to me, Mary. And what's the exact phrasing?
He says, don't hold on to me, for I have not gone to be with, or I haven't gone to be with the one who sent me.
Yeah. And I think that's an interesting, I sometimes I've heard it translated as, or like understood as, you know, don't touch my body because then I'm going to be sinful and I might not make it to heaven, or I might not be able to, you know, I've heard all these very interesting interpretations. And when I think about it, it's like, you don't have to cling to my body because I'm with you. I'm with you. And when I complete this journey of what I've been sent to do, and I finish it by going to be with the one who sent me, then I'm going to send to you the advocate, the Holy Spirit, the one that lives inside of you, that Jesus then is within us. We don't have to cling to the body because God is with us in spirit, like in ourselves.
Yeah, which I definitely lean towards. And I also think, and maybe this is the same thing I read in that particular commentary, is it's also a reminder that God's time and space is not our time and space. That the way God and now through the risen Christ functions I think it's very expansive and it's complicated for us to fully understand. But I think Claire said this at some point, it's also movement, right? This whole passage is full of movement, and that verse is also full of movement. And I think Jesus as the risen Christ is still in movement. And the Holy Spirit then is movement, if we were to move on, if you were to read Acts. And so I think that is, I don't know, for me, it's just one more reminder that God's time and space is not mine, and it is a mystery. And I trust and recognize that the Spirit is with me, and that's the part of what Jesus is living out, what the risen Christ is living out in this moment.
Yeah, and if we're thinking about it, you know, when Mary and the disciples are sitting there and wondering what happened to Jesus, you know, the angels asked, "Why are you crying? Who are you looking for?" And then Jesus himself asks Mary, like, why are you crying? Who are you looking for? And if you go back to the beginning of John and read the whole entire book, it's kind of a theme in John, this journey of looking for Jesus.
Yeah.
This question of who are you looking for? What are you seeking? And I think it's so beautiful. It culminates in this moment of Mary has not left Jesus' side. She is reaching outside of herself, looking for Jesus. And when she finally meets him and he says her name, he tells her and she realizes that he is already within her.
Yeah, that's a great point, that it is a seeking book, that you're for people who are really seeking, and you know, who is Jesus? Who is this guy? What does he do? What is he all about? How do I find him?
And that Jesus might show up in our lives so unexpectedly like that. Like, she thought it was the gardener. And I wonder if we turned our attention at times, would it not be like that coworker that annoys the hell out of us, or like someone on the street who you know what I mean? The clerk checking us out. Like, if we changed our attention, if we really are going to say that the image of God is in all of us, then Jesus is showing up in the gardener, you know, Jesus as the gardener, Mary's attention changed to that. And so if our attention changes, if we can really see God in everyone, including ourselves, the landscape of possibility changes, right? Like, everything changes, and it's better and more than we could ever know on our own.
Yes.
And so I just think that, like, that it's such an interesting thing that they name them as a gardener. And then when he says her name, the attention changes, her focus changes. She sees clearly.
And I think that there's the good news. The good news is God is within us, right? In different ways, but God is within us. That transformation is there. We are, our name is used, and God is within our name. It's with, you know, and so that's where I go, okay, where's the good news? That's the good news for me. And it's something I have to remind myself of every day. It's something I have to remind myself of, that it's in others, right? If God's within me, then that means God's within you, and God's within that person I'm annoyed with. God's within that clerk where I'm cashing out, or that, you know, the person who's serving me my coffee or whatever it is, right?
Yeah, that transformation is Jesus reminding us of who we really are. And we can search as far and wide as we can, but when it comes down to it, it all goes back to that introspection.
And we don't have to cling to it. We don't have to cling to this false idea of who God is or who Jesus is, the way, like, she's trying to cling onto the body, and God is always bigger than that, within and bigger. So, like, when we're clinging to this idea of, like, who we think we need God to be, And Jesus says, it's better than that. Like, it's way more better than that. It's bigger than that. It's more expansive than that. And so it just, like, for me, that gives me freedom to just, like, breathe and let it go. And it's like, Dana, you were saying, it's not my timeline. It's not my expectation. And if I hold on to that, then I limit myself and I limit the goodness that it could be. And so it's just, don't cling to it. Don't cling to this false idea, because it's, God's got more.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
This transformation is this new and expansive vision of hope that Jesus gives.
I'm really into this idea right now about, like, the expanse. Like, I just want to, for me and my, like, I just want to be like, what does faith expressed in love look like? If we push the boundaries, if we push the limits, if we continue to read and talk and be with people who are different than us, you know, I was thinking about the ways that we worship in the Methodist church. It seems like, you know, it's prayer, it's sermon, and it's song. Couldn't it be dance? Couldn't it be surfing? Couldn't it be, you know, couldn't it be like the expansiveness? And so this idea of, like, being expansive in our ideas of God and faith expression, just like continuing to push the boundaries of what that looks like.
Yeah, because that's what Jesus invites us to. And I think it's easy for us to get stuck in what we know. And I think Jesus wants to push us beyond what we know, which is scary and risky, but that's what Jesus does when he says our name.
And I think where for me, when I hear that and when I think about what that looks like, I think I go back to, like, and I think it was Chelsea who said this at some point, is why is it so hard for us to really just love that, to love the expansiveness, to love what we don't know, to love what's uncomfortable. You know, it's uncomfortable, but we know through that, like, you know, if we have hope, if we have trust, if we know that God is love, and if within us is God, then within us is love. And that means love is within all people. And so how do we engage with people wherever they are on their journey, in whatever things that they resonate with, and really embrace that expansive love? I was going to say, and that's the question I'm always asking myself, right? That's the question I wrestle with, and how, and what gets in my way, and where do I show up and it's not real, and where do I show up and I put up my, you know, I'm too preoccupied with myself and what makes sense for me, my comfort zone, right?
Well, I think that's where we are in the church right now, in the Methodist church specifically. It's like, we want to cling to what makes us feel important or comfortable or whatever. And there, like, we need to be expansive, like, not clinging to this idea of church, but, like, letting it go and, like, seeing what God could do with it.
Right.
Brené Brown, in her new book, Alice of the Heart, she says, we feel entitled to comfort. And I love that, because whoever promised us comfort, right?
No.
Like, and that's the threshold of, like, of really cool things happening, I think, you know? And so, but our ego, like you said, like, we want to feel important. We want to feel comfortable. We want to feel like our legacy that we've, and I get that, you know, I get all that too.
Yeah, no, me as well. And I wrestle with it, because it's, sometimes I'm like, well, wait a minute. Being comfortable is not completely bad, is it? Like, sometimes I need to be comfortable, you know? And yes, no, some, I think sometimes I do need to be comfortable, but I can't sit there. I can't stay in that space, right? Because that's not really letting me be fully who God created me to be.
And I think it's also about letting go of our ideas and our paradigm of failure and success, especially in an institution like the Methodist Church.
Yeah.
You know, because when we do things, institutions and people, they want to hear about the numbers and the successes of it. You know, sometimes if we're gonna take risks and try new things, there's gonna be failure. And we have to be okay with that if we want to try new things and practice this expansive form of hope, which is scary.
I think that goes back to Jesus's point. Don't hold on to me.
Yeah.
You can't hold on. You got to let go.
Can't box them in.
You can't.
Cause I'm trying to imagine myself, like, sitting in my Board of Ordained Ministry interview, and I'm getting ready to start my second year of provisional membership, which is just a part of the process of becoming fully ordained as the deacon in the United Methodist Church. And I have to do a project, and they haven't given us a lot of guidelines, but they said, you know, 75% of you, we're going to ask you to rewrite it. A lot of people, their projects fail, but we want you to take risks. And I'm terrified to sit in front of a board and potentially tell them that I I took a risk doing a project at my church and it failed because they could choose not to continue me. I don't think that they wouldn't because of this, but they could if they wanted to. And so this passage is challenging me in that way and making me think about this. But in them saying that, I'm going to hold them to that. I love this idea that they're offering failure. And I really hope that they're genuine in that, because I think that that's important.
Yeah, you learn from it. Mm-hmm. Everybody learns from it.
I posted this thing from the Naked Pastor the other day, who does really great art. But he said, "We say the grave could not contain him, but we believe our theology can."
Mm-hmm. Amen. That's what we
said. I feel like that's like a mic drop type of moment right there. Like, and exactly what we're talking about. Like, if the grave can't hold, like, can't cling to him and keep him there, like, why do we feel like we, like, our individual selves and institutions can't? Like, we love to know, and we love to box, and we love to label, and it's better than that.
It's so much better, so much bigger, so much more. And our brains can't even process it, but we can just roll around in it and have fun with
possibilities.
It. And paint. Yes, yes.
But it doesn't end there, right? There's one more line.
Yes. So Jesus says, you know, he tells Mary, "Don't hold on to me, for I've not yet returned to the one who sent me." And he tells her to go and tell the other disciples. So Mary Magdalene went to the disciples with the news and says, "I have seen the Lord."
Mm-hmm. And this could be a whole podcast on its own, but here's we have the first declaration of the risen Lord from a female. Like, I just think that, like, talk about subversive and radical. I mean, this was like, Jesus was clearly sending a message, giving this message to Mary. I mean,
to Mary.
She's the first preacher here. So
he could have appeared to anybody.
He could have appeared to anyone. He appears to her, and it is also consistent in the three other gospels. While the stories are a little bit different, he always appears to Mary, to the females, to the women, I should say.
So for anybody doubting female clergy or ordination or anything like that, please go and read the resurrection story and let us know what you think.
The first Easter sermon ever preached.
Right.
The first Easter sermon ever preached by a woman.
Yes. We'd like to hear your thoughts.
Right. We'd like to. We invite you to write to us.
You know, I know that we really did try to cover a lot. This story is like incredible. And there's so many things to pull apart. But I think what we want people to really walk away with is this new vision, expansive vision of hope. And to maybe think about your own lives and where are times even now that you might feel that there is an empty tomb, and maybe be open to the possibility of it could be better than what you ever dreamed. But we all have moments of empty tomb moments, and where can we find the hope in them?
Well, this was super exciting. I'm glad we could go on and on. And I do want to say that to the audience. We are mindful of the time. We do watch it, but I think we could talk for like another 30 minutes and go down all kinds of rabbit holes, but we're going to hold it here.
We invite you to go down your own rabbit holes.
We do. We invite,
and then, let us know.
Yes. Email us. Send us a message. Let us know what you're wrestling with, what you're struggling with. You're like, wait a minute. Dana said this. That doesn't make any sense. You know, we're all learning together. This is a learning community. One of my professors says, it's a learning community.
Mm-hmm. And join our online forum. We have our own collective table online forum that we created so that you could do just that. We have forum posts, we have spiritual practices, we post some of our events on there, we repost our podcast, and that is the exact place that we hope you will engage and go down those rabbit holes and ask those questions so that we can wrestle with them together.
Yes, that'd be awesome.
So we'll be taking a little bit of a break, but we'll be picking it up this summer in June with our summer podcast series called Songs of Summer, where we'll be interviewing some of our favorite artists about a particular song that they find meaningful or we found meaningful, and trying to help provide resources if you're into music, what music is thoughtful and meaningful and uplifting. So make sure to check out season 5. That'll come in June, and lots of events happening in between. So if you're not following us on social media, The Collective Table, sign up for our newsletter, get on the online forum, or send us an email. We always love to chat. So be on the lookout for all those things.
Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for joining us, everyone.
Thanks.